Hello and welcome to Miss Next Game Episode 2. I'm your host, Scouse Boy, and I'm here with my co-host,
Picnic Mick.
And today we've got a lot of things on a packed agenda. The first thing we're going to discuss is the Underworld roster and squad.
Scampering filth.
That's a very good way to describe them. We'll be looking at them both for league play and for tournament play, and we'll be highlighting some of the best things about their squad and their roster, and some of the degenerate tactics that you can come up with them in order to improve your game for fun and profit.
Absolutely.
Next, after that, we'll be moving on to Mick's Hobby Masterclass. What have you got for us this week, Mick?
Eyes. This is a way of doing eyes that... There's no really easy way of doing eyes, but this is the easiest way that I have found.
Fantastic. That sounds great, because I know that eyes can be the bane of a lot of people's hobby in sessions. I know mine, they end up looking, one eye looking at you, one eye looking for you, all over the place. Any guidance in that way will be really helpful for me personally, so I'm looking forward to that.
If this was kind of painting Tinder,
yeah,
the things you'd be looking for, nice base, nice eyes, nice face. That's what you're looking for.
Nice.
And if you can pull them off,
yeah,
then nobody's really checking out the rest of the model that much.
Fantastic. So hopefully we'll be able to swipe right on that later on. After that, we'll be moving on to a discussion on the Fearless Blood Bowl inventory, which I will expand upon later.
It's deep.
It's deep. Very deep. But also quite personal. So hopefully you'll enjoy that and get something from it. And then we'll move on to my performance at NAFC. I attended there playing the Shambling Undead, as I played Shambling Undead in UKTC as well. Mick didn't make it to NAFC, unfortunately. My performance has definitely got some talking points.
Yes.
So okay. I've got some copious notes, and we'll go through those. And hopefully I'll tie that back to the Fearless Blood Bowl inventory.
Yes.
All will become clear when we get to that section. But of course, we'll always round off the podcast with another fantastic round of the game that everybody is talking about, NAF Name or Nonsense, in which I will be giving Mick 5 possible NAF names, and he has to...
I will amateurishly, psychologically profile them and decide whether they play Blood Bowl or not.
That is right.
Aiming for a perfect score this time, either 6 right or 6 wrong.
Well, considering there's only 5, that'd be very impressive to get 6 out of 6.
You always got to have some aim
that
for.
That is very true. That is very true. So, as you can see, we've got a packed agenda. So, without further ado, let's get to it. Bring on the drums.
Yes.
Welcome back. Now we're going to be talking about Underworld. What did you call them, Mick?
Scampering filth.
Scampering filth.
So pull back that grate. Put on a mask. Delve into the darkness. And don't even think about what that is your foot is touching.
The Underworld squad is a very popular squad at the moment, both in league play and in tournament play, because it seems to have a lot of things at its disposal. A lot of options for the player. A lot of those options, in fact, all of those options are relatively squishy.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have a certain mindset when you play this team, because if you're going in and not expecting your pieces to die, then you're going to be in for a bad time. So let's first talk about what we can make up the squad of. So the lineman piece for Underworld is a goblin.
Yes.
Of which you can have 0 to 12, I believe.
0 to 12 of them, yes. The other thing you can have now... You were talking about mindset there. The average mooks that you'd have on a Skaven team, the linemen, are actually... You can have 3.
Yes, 3 line rats.
They are the kind of competent players, the people who can chew gum and walk at the same time.
Yeah.
Getting used to that, is part of getting used to the team. There's such a massive swing from... absolute garbage on the team to complete mercurial genius in the team as well.
Alongside the line rats, of course, you do have the other half of that sprue,
which
is one Skaven blitzer, one Skaven thrower, and one Skaven gutter runner.
And they are so good.
Every single one of them has a fine part to play within the team, which is great. Originally, back in 2016, before... the 2020 changes, it was 2 blitzers and 1 thrower.
Mm-hmm.
they've swapped that over now to 1-1-1 of the three positionals I've mentioned. And it's hard not to believe that that's because they are all on one sprue.
It is. And I think when they first came out, listening to a lot of players and a lot of Blood Bowl podcasts, there was a lot of kind of scepticism about the, is it going to actually work as a team?
Hmm.
And as time's gone by, boy, it works as a team.
It definitely does work as a team. Yeah. The other parts of the team that help it work are you get one big guy, which is either a warped troll or a rat ogre.
Yeah.
And you also get, and I think these are the unsung heroes of the team, 0-6 snotlings.
Oh, they're so much fun.
Now, you say that there was a lot of scepticism when the team first came about. That's largely true. And I think that in 2020, I think that a lot of the things that the Underworld team can do, or a lot of the toys that the Underworld team have been given, are there to sort of push its viability.
Mm.
Because they have got stronger with the new rules. So one of the things that the Underworld team has is swarming. Mick, do you want to tell us what swarming is?
Yes, swarming is an unexpected slap in the face for your opponent if they're not expecting it. So if you are playing against somebody new, make sure you explain that this can happen. So this is before the kickoff roll. You can add up to D3 extra snotlings coming onto the pitch from your reserve box. There's some fine detail in there, which I'll let you go and read the rule book about as well. About how many exactly you can have on there. Depends on how many snotlings you already have on the pitch already. And what this can do is this can reinforce a side. Reinforce is a very strong word for strength one pieces. But it can reinforce a side. It can plug some gaps after you've seen where your opponent has been setting up. And it's almost like a free perfect defense that's not as good as a perfect defense. Really, really big fan of it. And they can cause a lot of problems. And any problems that are caused by snotlings, it's even more delightful because they're absolute garbage. But even absolute garbage sticks on the tackle zone.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing with the swarming pieces. The swarming rule originally was you just add a D3 of your swarming pieces, which in this team, and in any team, to be honest, is snotlings. You can just put them onto the pitch in the phase that Mick mentioned. That proved to be a bit too good for the Underworld squad because they were just getting an extra up to three players on the pitch. And that can take you, we've not mentioned, that can take you above 11, so you can play up to 14 players on the pitch at once. Now, the rule is you can only swarm to the amount of players that you already have on the pitch that have swarming. So, you set up your starting 11. If you have two snotlings in your setup, when you roll your swarming D3, you can have up to two swarming onto the pitch. So if you roll a three, the third one doesn't come on.
Mm.
So if you don't have any snotlings on the pitch to start with, you can't swarm at all.
Mm.
If you have three, you can have up to the maximum and so on. That's a quite delicate difference, but it's actually a really clever difference because it means that you've got to pad your original 11 with what is largely seen as a suboptimal piece, the one strength, albeit dodges on anywhere on a two sidestepping tackle zone. It does the job in, it does depress the quality of the Underworld team to an extent where it's not broken. But obviously 14 players is, or 13 players, whatever it happens to be,
it's marvellous.
Is better than the 11 that you've got. A little more on snotlings. Their downsides are that they are strength one. Their armour is broken on a 6+. They also have titchy, which means that when people are dodging through their tackle zones, there's no -1 modifier. So elves can basically run through the ranks if they need to. However, they still do assert a tackle zone. So you still have to make that dodge. And they can assist things as usual. So they can supply... They're very, very mobile.
Yeah.
They, as I say, they dodge anywhere themselves on a 2+ with a reroll.
And they are a free foul.
And they are a free foul.
Because they're terrible. If one of them gets... Yeah. They're as good at fouling as a dwarf blitzer.
Well, exactly. Yes, as adept as a wood elf war dancer.
Absolutely.
at the job of fouling. So
with
that is fair.
Only the downside of cost, like 15,
I think the 15K,
yeah,
something
cares.
Like that, which is
who
just
cares?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
You can't get a Freddo for that, can you?
You can't even get a Freddo for that these days. No, that is true. Oh yeah, the wizards turning people into Freddos. Be good. But anyway, enough of the snotlings.
Enough of the snotlings.
They are, without doubt, the unsung heroes of the team, I think. If we go back to the Skaven posse, so you get your six Skaven, and I think operating with anything less than six Skaven is a mistake. There's something to say about the, I want to say upgrade, but it's not necessarily an upgrade, from two blitzers and one thrower to 1-1-1 blitzer thrower gutter runner. Gutter runners are obviously great, and their agility is marvellous for ball handling, and their speed is second to none, as we know. In this team, though, a case could be made for preferring the second blitzer. Because
I would confidently, mm-hmm. and I would stand upon a soapbox mm-hmm. with a flare, and yeah. I would say that's wrong.
Okay, that's fine. You've played these more than I have.
I've played them in two leagues. I have not played them in a tournament yet. The difference that I found is once you start getting skills on them, and when I say skills, what I actually mm-hmm. mean, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of mutations.
Okay.
Once you start getting some mutations and skills on that gutter runner, they become incredible. They become mm-hmm. borderline unfair.
That is fair, yeah.
So
they're one skill away from blodge to start with.
One skill away from blodge, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first skill you put on there, blodge makes total sense.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the mutations you can get on them just makes them an absolute terror weapon. Mm-hmm. So you can give them two heads, which gives them +1 to dodge
yeah.
everywhere. You can give them extra arms that makes them even easier to pick up the ball, catch the ball,
yeah. Yeah.
etc. Even if you're just stuck with those two, you're absolutely flying. An agility 2+ piece
yeah.
with an extra +1 for the second head can just fly through most
That's
lines.
That's true. It's
and
like
you're
giving
getting a free
them
reroll
almost. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
and yeah. you're getting a free reroll with it as well
yeah. Yeah.
From having dodge. So two blitzers would be great for the punching, but for sheer, I'm just going to score.
Fair.
Is great.
I understand that. I do understand that. The issue, I mean, obviously I'm going to play devil's advocate a
you
little.
Do that.
And I am coming from a position of less experience than Mick with this, so obviously take my comments with a pinch of salt. But with the second blitzer, it gives you two pieces with strength access,
mm-hmm.
which obviously gives you more guard, and that takes away a chunk of the issues that the bottom end of the team may have
mm-hmm.
with their strength 2 against the, mm-hmm. the average strength 3 pieces. They also have slightly better armor.
They do.
With the 8+. So I don't think it's as cut and dried as one being a strict upgrade.
And
however, make some fine points.
Now, mine is coming from league play. I've never used these in a tournament. So all the things that Craig is saying there about the second blitzer and extra guard in there.
Yeah.
And not to kind of foreshadow the next bit, I'm rubbish at using guard.
I will also say that it's entirely moot because you can't have two blitzers. You've got yourself a gutter runner. The other thing with the gutter runner as well, it's another strength 2 piece in a team that has a lot of strength 2 and even strength 1 pieces. So I think it's a piece that makes the team more of a finesse team.
Yes.
And that is something that is very attractive to a certain type of player.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. And having that, those options of having that strength 9.
Strength 9 gutter runner. Wow. And the SPPs has he got through.
Absolutely.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is absolutely fabulous.
Movement 9 is not to be sniffed at. You're quite correct. I'd also want to touch a little bit more on the mutations, because obviously the goblins can have mutations.
So much fun.
And some mutated goblins are amazing. Stuff like horns on a goblin
mm-hmm.
means he's dodging in to a cage on a 3 and hitting the 3 the strength three ball carrier for one dice,
mm.
which is wonderful, wonderful.
It is marvellous. What I'd really recommend for your goblins when you're going through these with league play is embrace the random mutations sometimes. Embrace them, because their chances are they're not going to live to get six to star player points. So when you get the three, just give it a go. You might get something brilliant. You might get horns. A two heads goblin. Dodging over on a 2+ with a reroll. It's brilliant.
Horns and two heads are the gold standard of the mutations you want. But given mutations, random mutations to lineman pieces, I think is a fine strategy across most league play. I'd do that for humans. I'd do that for any team, really. Because you can always sack them.
Exactly. And with the goblins, if you are kind of trying not to spend too much on your team value and want to blow up the team value too much, once you've got those Skaven bought, and if they're not dead, you've got very little to spend your money on.
Mm.
So sack off the goblin who gets iron hard skin, which I have rolled, and just buy a fresh one.
I had three human linemen with shadowing at one point.
Send them off to the shadowing retirement home for lonely linemen.
They were all dispatched with very quickly. Yeah, I think the mutations on the goblins are absolutely fantastic. The other thing to mention is the choice of big guy for this team. And in all honesty, I don't think it's much of a choice at all. I think having the troll over the rat ogre is the correct choice most of the time. The rat ogre is, in a way, the better piece because it can do more damage. It's obviously got frenzy, but it's slightly more fragile, and this team needs something to soak up a little bit of damage.
Mm.
And the troll can do that. Also, the troll gives you both the fun and profit of being able to throw goblins and snotlings around willy-nilly, which the rat ogre doesn't do.
And the anti-war dancer, beautiful special rule of just chundering all over
them. That's right. I was in UKTC, a few of my pieces were vomited upon. Nothing bad happened, which I'm glad to see. Although the troll that I was playing against did vomit on itself a couple of times as well. So that was nice to see. But we'll get to that later on in the podcast.
The thrower, the Skaven thrower. Oh, one of the best throwers in the game.
That's fair. We should talk about the Skaven thrower. He's 2+, isn't he? 2+ passing?
2+ passing. Yeah. Sure hands, come with sure hands, comes with pass. Movement 7 to start with. He's getting that ball anywhere. He's picking it up. And early access to blodge, to block, which means once you've given him that, you've kind of almost got a bit of a second blitzer going on there if you need it.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking about him. Is he better than the human thrower?
Oh, he's got an extra move.
He's got one less armor.
One less armor.
But he, other than that, he's identical. Is that fair?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting, that. Because I thought the human thrower was the best in the game.
And
tough call.
He's thrown to someone who can catch it on a two.
Yeah, that's true. However, the human thrower is thrown to somebody who can catch it on a three with a reroll, which is better than a 1-6.
True.
It's a 1-9. But they can move an extra square. So, that's fine. And dodge away much more successfully. Well, much more successfully as well. Yeah. So that's fair.
In my league team on this, I've been doing a lot of the randoms and I'm using BB roster to do it.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm sure that there's been a bug in the BB roster, because I promise you I haven't cheated on this. If I had cheated, I would have picked something better.
Okay.
But I've ended up with about, I think it's 4 or 5 of my Skaven players have ended up with sure hands.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
So they're very, very, very reliable.
So you're giving randoms to your positionals in this?
I have done. Just for a giggle.
Fair enough.
To see what I get.
I very quickly decided that was not the way for me when I in league play.
Yeah.
Well, it's the only time you can take it, isn't it? Just because I just kept rolling shadowing. And then I did have three players with kick at one stage. And I wasn't getting... I was getting things like multiple block on my blitzer.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no, I can't afford to do that anymore. So line people, I'll do. Okay, so let's move on to the actual...
Tournament build.
The good thing with the tournament build is that although nowadays Underworld are tier one, they do have a lot of play. The fact that swarming can be a factor is great. They can have a deep roster, which is also good. And you can give those skills to the key players, because a lot of your players you don't really want to give any skills to at all. Yes, you might go for a sneaky Git Snotling or something like that, but there are better things to do. Bolster your Gutter Runner with Block, and give Mighty Blow or even Claws or something to your Skaven Blitzer. You know, there are things there that you can do. If you get a double skill, you can stick Block on your big guy, and therefore your troll becomes a lot better.
You have another option as well.
Yeah.
And I think this would probably work in tournaments as well. Mm-hmm. I've been given first skill for the Blitzer was Horns.
Okay.
And Guard on the troll.
Nice.
Which gives you an option of a strength 5 going in there quite a lot of the time. Yeah.
That's fair. I also like sticking Horns on a goblin, as I've said.
That's funny.
Because the blitzing in on a 3 with strength 3 with the ability to dodge into a cage on a 1 in 9 is not to be sniffed at all. Another thing that is probably the key thing for the Underworld and the success they've been having, I think it is the Snotlings and the Swarming, simply because when you go to a Blood Bowl tournament, you take your team and you optimise the team to face what you expect across the board to be a similar metric as the one that you're presenting. In that you'll go in with my 11 guys will beat your 11 guys, plus the removals that I'll get and the slight depth in my roster. With an Underworld roster, they slightly disrupt that metric. Not as much as someone like Snotlings do, but we'll get to that when we talk about NAFC. In that they bring a slightly bigger knife to a knife fight. It's not a gun, but they're coming to the table with 12 active players at least. Maybe 13, not usually 14, because it's unlikely that they'll have 3 Snotlings on the pitch for the Swarming to start with. 2, I can see. But it means they've got more players than you, and that causes a multitude of issues for everybody else who's approaching the game with a fair fight mindset. So there's that. And then there's the fact that they can attack on multiple levels, in that most of their guys can dodge. They're not afraid of being removed because they'll have a deep bench. They'll have generally 15 players, maybe 16. And so the things that you're fighting on, they're answering those questions in a very broad manner. In a tournament, depending on how deep the skill set is, you might not have, for example, many tackle pieces, unless you're dwarves or chaos dwarves. So you might have one tackle guy. You might only have, say, 3 or 4 block pieces, again, unless you're dwarves or Norse or something like that. So those strength one guys with Titchy and Sidestep will only be being brought down by POWs. If you don't roll the POWs,
then they'll be fine. Sidestep is so good.
So annoying. And it's the same, in a way, with the goblins. You'll get 2 dice on the goblins, but unless you're surgically going in with the pieces that can damage them, then they can cause you problems all day.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things to really, really watch out when you're... Because these, as we've been describing them, just sound incredible. The problem is they only have 6 competent guys.
That is true.
And 3 of those are irreplaceable. If you manage to take out a Gutter Runner, you kind of pull out one of the incisors, one of the fangs of this team. Yeah. If you take out the Blitzer, you've then taken out the other fang of the team. Take out the Thrower, you take out the pivot for that team. So if you're playing against these guys, target them and be merciless against them.
That's a very fair thing to say.
What about stars?
It's not often that you'll get to play stars with the Underworld. You might, because obviously there are a number of different rule sets amongst many tournaments. Traditionally, a star like Hackflem would be a good choice. However, now that they've upgraded their blitzer, well, now that they've changed their blitzer, their second blitzer to a gutter runner, he's not necessarily as needed.
Mm-hmm.
You could go for something with a bit more strength. A
bit creak?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
You could go for someone like the big fat Glart.
Mm-hmm.
Is another option. It depends on whether you want to put your skills on the package that you've got. I think, as usual, I wouldn't pay too much attention to the stars when you come to. I think you'll gain more traction in your games if you play Underworld with the mindset that you need to improve your skill at manufacturing 2-die blocks with low strength pieces. Mm. That's something that I'm not particularly good at. We'll get to that later.
Okay.
But the best Underworld coaches, and I've played a few really good ones at the World Cup and so forth, who have obviously played the team for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were manufacturing so many positive blocks with goblins and snotlings, and it almost felt like they were dancing around the pitch and knocking my players over left and right.
Total blood bowl.
It was total fluid. Blood bowl. It was fluid, yeah. Sexy football. Sexy
it,
blood bowl.
It was sexy blood bowl. I can't believe this is a family podcast. We've talked about sexy fluids already.
The other thing with Underworld that you do have to consider is that they are armor 7 or worse pretty much across the board. And we all know that some games, armor 7 is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone survives whatever you do. And everyone's there with pillows instead of claws and nobody dies. But on those games where that armor breaks, you'll be in for a rough time.
Things go south very, very, very quickly.
And as with a number of teams, dwarves properly punch them in the face.
In the league that we've got down in Barnsley, thankfully, no dwarves. There are two Norse teams that I've yet to face, which looking forward to.
You can have block, just don't give them tackle. That's the thing. Well, marvellous. That's our talk on Underworld. I thought that was quite comprehensive.
If I was going to be summing up Underworld, I would say one of the reasons I really, really love it is if you're a serious gamer, there are loads of ways to kind of genetically mutate them into becoming a really, really effective team. If you just want to embrace the madness, there's so much madness with this team. The mutations, the fouling snotlings, chucking snotlings around, vomiting on things. If you just want to go out there for a good time and not bothered about winning, there's so much joy in this. Modelling and painting as well. The mutations you can just go absolutely bananas with. So grab yourself a couple of Chaos Sprues and some mutations, stick them on, extra heads, everything like that. Go bananas and you'll love it. So that's one of the reasons I really, really love the Underworld team.
Fantastic. That's really good advice there. Sounds like my next project might be create some marvellously mutated Underworld guys, because that sounds like a lot of fun.
Ah, brilliant.
Great stuff. Let's move on. I'm just going to put that in now. Don't have the music. Welcome back. We're now going to move on to the second part of our agenda, which is Mick's Hobby Masterclass. Mick, are you going to be making some eyes for us?
I am going to be... I've only got eyes for you.
Fabulous.
I've only got eyes for you tonight. Fabulous. Absolutely.
Smooth.
So, one of the things about eyes is, if on a model, if you can pull them off and make them look even semi-realistic, you're putting your models probably above, looking at painted models, I'd say about 75% of people don't even have a go at them.
That's fair.
And if you can pull this off, you automatically really bump up your figures and make them look mega smart. This is a way that I saw in a really ancient White Dwarf. I can't remember the actual issue of it. We're talking kind of 80s or early 90s, this one. And some of the ways I've seen of doing it, the bit where it goes wrong is if you don't put that little black dot right in the middle of exactly right in both eyes, it looks weird.
Yeah.
It looks like he's looking two different directions
and
things like that. It does not look fab. And even if it's in the same place, if the dots are different size, you're struggling again. So, picture the scene. I want you to paint a picture in your mind. Paint a picture in your mind of the face of your model. Okay. First thing you're going to do, just paint the rest of the skin on the face. I'll cover some ways of doing that nice and easily in some future ones. What you want to do is do either a black line, a thin black line, or if you have got a lot more brush control, a bit of an almond shape on the eyes, so just kind of paint the eye out black. You can make it look a little bit more natural by maybe mixing some black and some rhinoxide or a really dark brown and add a bit more to the naturalistic side of it. Then what you do, you get a tiny dot of white on your paintbrush, on one of your smallest paintbrushes. The choice of white is really, really important. And, you know, I love Games Workshop to death. They've given me so much joy in the year, but GW, please, just make a nice white. The Corax white and the, I think it's Ceramite white as well. They're not good. Best one I can find is the one that I've been using. I'm sure there's other really good ones out there. It's the Vallejo, just honest to God white. I'm sure it's not called honest to God white. The opacity in that is, it's just, you need a tiny dot and it's just, it's pure brilliant white there. You take some nice white, tiny dot on the end of your brush, and you paint one dot of white in the same corner of each eye, and you leave it. And what it looks like your model is looking over in either to the left, if you put it in that corner of the eye, or over to the right, if you put it on the other side of the eye. The optical illusion, it looks like they're looking over a particular direction, and it looks like an eye. And as long as you can get it generally on the left or generally on the right of both eyes, you're in. It looks good. Fantastic. And you can kind of go through and do a whole team worth of eyes probably in about, probably not even 20 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. I know we haven't got a Facebook page or anything like that for this yet. That is coming.
That is coming.
Anybody who's, you know, I post on the Blood Bowl community quite a lot with painting. I'll put some pictures. That's how I do it on all the teams that I post.
Fantastic.
So
that's really good
have
advice.
A go with that. Black stripe, white dot in the same corner of each eye. Bingo, you're away.
I have questions.
You ask me those questions.
So one thing I've found with my painting of eyes, mm-hmm. which has been of a mixed success. Sometimes okay. I'm like, they're wonderful, I've done well with them. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they have been, as you've described, one eye looking at you, one eye looking for you. So
come to bunk bed eyes.
yes, that's a great one. But either both ways, it's been the traditional way of painting white and then dotting black.
Mm-hmm.
And I've found that what happens with them, it looks like they're always wild staring eyes because it's in the middle of the white.
Yes.
So this is basically saying that half of the area of the eye will be pupil to a certain extent.
Yeah. The other thing that if you just look at a picture of a person from, stood about 30, 40 feet away, which is kind of the illusion that you'll get when you're looking at War Games miniatures, you try and spot the whites in their eyes.
Yeah.
You're probably not going to see it.
Well, that's where I'm coming to with my next question.
Yes.
I know a lot of people who whose painting I respect.
Mm-hmm.
Not as good as yourself, because you're somebody, as we've established, somebody whose painting I would pay for.
Pretty much all the people I watch on YouTube, I'm not fit to lace the shoes of their best
mate. Absolutely nonsense. However, I know a lot of people who have said that they've stopped doing eyes completely now, entirely from what you've just said. Because in real life, the phrase, don't attack until you see the whites of their eyes, is very much true, because you never see the whites of somebody's eyes until they're really, really close up.
Yeah.
And that's not how we play with the miniatures that we have. So,
do eyes matter, is your saying?
That's what I'm asking, yes.
I would say yes, and this is personal preference, because, you know, nobody can tell somebody they're having the wrong kind of fun.
Of course, yeah.
So if you're happy just not painting eyes, fantastic.
Yeah.
What I've found is if you take a model and have the eyes just look like some Auton from Doctor Who, where there's no eye there to see whatsoever, and then you paint an eye on it, you ask 10 people which one looks better, they'll say the one with the eyes looks
better. That's probably
correct. If they're done half decent. Yeah. There's always that the picture of the meme picture of the Space Marine
Yeah.
We all know the one. We do, yes. With like the eye up on his forehead and one down his cheek. Obviously, yeah. If it's done really badly, it can ruin them all.
I mean, as with everything, having an option to do eyes successfully is a tool in your toolkit.
Mm.
And you can choose to use it or not.
Yes.
On a model-to-model basis. The final question I've got, mm-hmm. which will tie back to the tip that you gave us in Mixed Hobby Masterclass in mm-hmm. episode one, would you do the eyes before or after you do the wash of Seraphim Sepia or the wash of the natural tone to bring the model together?
Yeah, I'd do it afterwards. Otherwise, the brightness of the wire and the eye is quite important on that one.
Of course, of course. I thought that would be the case. I just thought it's worth bearing in mind because I usually add my wash of talent at the mm-hmm. end.
Yes.
And it can, as we've established, mess things up unless you do it well.
Absolutely. So with all tips, give it a try on something you don't really care that much about. Mm-hmm. And you might need to have a go with it 4 or 5 times before it looks good. But yeah, it's the easiest way that I've found to get some good results. And anybody who can paint a realistic looking eye with the colour of the iris in there and the pupil and all that kind of thing, wow.
Fair play to them.
Yeah, fair play to them. Well, in there, you are better than I am.
Marvellous. Well, thank you very much for that, Mick.
No worries.
I'll get to painting eyes on my models as soon as I finish this podcast.
Wonderful.
Welcome back to the next section of Miss Next Game Episode 2. And now we're moving on to the more esoteric part of the proceedings, where I'd like to introduce the concept of the Fearless Blood Bowl Inventory.
Yeah, we want you to look inside yourselves for this one.
Yes.
Embrace the inner you.
The Fearless Blood Bowl Inventory is a crib from a concept from Magic the Gathering strategy back in the early 2000s. For people who don't know, I used to be a semi-decent Magic the Gathering player.
You're very, very internationally travelling and representing the nation.
I've done okay. I've paid a few bills with winnings, which is great. And I was the managing editor of a prominent strategy site for a very long time. And some of the articles that came through at the time of me doing that were entitled The Fearless Magic Inventory. Mm. I'll break down the actual concept quickly. In order to get better at any strategy game, be it Magic or be it Blood Bowl or chess or whatever, then the player would need to be brutally honest with themselves about the things that they consider are holding them back from getting better. The inventory part of the Fearless Blood Bowl inventory would involve the player sitting and considering the myriad of things that they could improve about their strategy, their temperament, their outlook towards the game itself,
mm-hmm.
and their personal development. The fearless part of the Fearless Blood Bowl inventory is that brutal honesty.
Mm.
And the fearless attitude to admitting where things need improvement.
Mm.
Because we've all both heard the stories and told the stories of where we would have just won that game if Nuffle hadn't come and punched us in the face.
Yes.
I would suggest that 90% of people complaining about dice rolls and luck are losing games not through dice rolls and luck. So creating your own Fearless Blood Bowl inventory is a step to itemising the issues that you have, admitting them to a wider audience, be it your mate, or even just a piece of paper.
Or the world.
Or the world in a podcast.
Well, the world who gives a monkey.
Yeah, the 96 people who listen to the first episode.
And we love you, 96 guys.
Thank you, yes.
Thank you.
So today, what I would like to do, and what Picnic Mick is also going to be doing, is we will share some of the things on our own Fearless Blood Bowl inventories, and talk to you about how we see our own faults and how we would look to improve those things going forward.
Do. And we've got a number of things ready for this. We've got a couch. We've got flannels.
We've
got some whale song.
Yes, it's all going to be very, very relaxing.
Yes.
And it's a safe space for everyone to talk about these things, which is good.
Absolutely.
Now, your Fearless Blood Bowl inventory could be 5 things, it could be 25 things, it could be 205 things that you think you need to improve on. We're going to talk about three,
mm-hmm.
because time is important. We've all got homes to go to. So I'll talk about three, Mick will talk about three. We'll go one and one, and we shall share with you the journey that we're on to improving our Blood Bowl success rate.
Let's do it.
Before we go, of course, Blood Bowl is a fun game. You might not be playing to win. If that's the case, fine. You can still get something from this because you can hopefully improve the fun that you're having.
Or help the other person on the other side of the table have more fun.
Exactly.
And they
exactly.
spread joy and light in the world.
Yeah, exactly. That could be part of your own Fearless Blood Bowl adventure.
If you're a Mardy Kit.
Exactly. Which takes us very, very well into the first part of my...
Are you not a Mardy Kit?
So, the first point on my Fearless Blood Bowl inventory. I lose focus, objectivity and civility when I am losing.
Oh, tell me about that.
Well, what I mean by that is I'm a very competitive player. Even when it doesn't matter, I like to win. I like to make the best plays. I like it when the dice go my way. And to a certain extent, I enjoy it when things are going successfully for me. As with any game with an element of luck, be it poker, be it any card game, anything with dice in, things don't always go your way.
No.
And I find when things start going badly, at first I up my concentration
mm-hmm.
to try and rein in those things. But when things start spiraling, I'm affected three ways. The first thing is that I lose my focus. And the way that demonstrates itself is that I'll start honing in on things that don't matter. For example, I'll get really irritated if my opponent doesn't move his turn marker mm-hmm, on at mm-hmm. the beginning of the turn. And that will annoy me for the entirety of their turn. If I'm there going, you need to move your turn marker on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they should move it on, but that's not something that should send me spiraling.
No.
But when I am losing, it does. And when I'm thinking of that, I'm not thinking of how I can get back into the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not thinking of a way to improve my position. I'm just thinking, my opponent's a dick. He's not moving his turn marker on. Second part of it is I lose my objectivity. When I start losing and things are spiraling out of my control, I start thinking, well, I should be winning this. That's not a healthy way to be. Because, as we've said, any game with a luck component in it has downs as well as ups. Claiming that, no, I should be winning this is not going to help you win it. It's just going to derail you from the actual attempts to win the game. And thirdly, and much to my shame, I become a Mardy Git.
Okay.
I will sit and pout. I will make pithy, inappropriate comments. I will basically be no fun to play against. And that is not how it should be. I believe, I'm happy to share this with Mick, the first time me and Mick played, I played vampires, Mick bought humans, much lower TV, so you had Griff on your team.
I did.
And your humans tore me to pieces.
I had Zara the Slayer.
Yeah, Zara as well,
and Griff and Zara. Why wouldn't you take...
Why not? Why not?
A woman with a big stake against vampires.
Mick beat me that day, I believe, 4-0.
I did.
And I'm sure Mick will admit you had the rub of the green for the majority of the game.
I absolutely had the rub of the green. Your guys were biting each other and everything like that.
That's vampires. And what can you expect?
Absolutely.
But Mick's play was solid and strong, and he used all of the pieces to his advantage and took advantage of the luck. And I was an absolute miserable git for the entire time. And I've apologised to Mick for this in the past, because I do come out of this fugue maybe a day later and I realise that it is not the way to act when you are playing a fun game and spending your spare time in the supposedly delightful company of people with similar interests.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I have to say, at the time, it didn't bother me. It didn't bother me.
Of course, you were winning 4-0.
winning 4-0 does help a great deal. Also, in my past, and I've given this up now, but have been five-a-side goalkeeper.
Mm.
And one of the kind of things when you're a goalkeeper, you know you're having a nice night is if all the strikers are calling you jammy, giving your dogs abuse and everything like that.
That's
because
fair.
They don't do that if they're lashing loads of girls in.
Yeah, that's
and
fair.
Normally, and this is exactly the same as when I was playing you, straight after the match, everybody's friends again.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
fine. So I didn't take it of any particular
Well, that's good
thing.
To know.
Yeah.
It still keeps me awake at night sometimes. So I thank you for saying that. I look to improve my outlook on these things. Bizarrely, it's one of the reasons why I moved away from Magic to a certain mm-hmm. extent, because I could see that in the more competitive nature and the more competitive setting.
Especially when you're playing for money like you are.
Exactly,
with,
exactly. With the top level of that
yeah.
game. Yeah. I drifted back into Blood Bowl as an antidote to that, to try and mellow me out.
Mm-hmm.
It's worked to a certain extent, not to the extent that I'd like. But I do know that I have lost friends in the past over this.
Okay.
And it's something that I am actively trying to improve.
I'm going to ask you a bit of a coaching question.
Go for it.
So what would good look like?
What would good look like
for this? How would you know that you've got there?
I think there's two parts to this. The first part I would say is that if I went to a tournament and I can't remember the exact quote, but if I could face both wins and losses and treat those both the same.
Yes.
Then that would be a good result for me. If I could embrace some of your talent for when things are going bad, cheering on the opposition.
To be fair, things have to be going really hopelessly
yeah.
bad for me to do that. But
yeah.
yes,
yeah.
Cheer them on, yes, once it's going away.
Another part would be good if I could not allow myself to be distracted by inconsequential minutiae.
Mm-hmm.
Like people moving on turn counters
mm.
or somebody talking in the background, or I don't like the way that model's eyes look on that picture. If I could concentrate more on the game, and even if I didn't win, I could still feel like I was supplying to the narrative of the game rather than reading the cliff notes around the game and not
yeah.
being involved properly.
Jolly good.
But mainly, I think success on this metric would be not feeling like a dickhead at the end of a loss because I'm sick of that. I'm sick of thinking when everything's done and I've been beaten,
mm-hmm.
I'm sick of going, right, the next thing I need to do is apologise to my opponent.
Yeah.
That happens too often.
Okay.
And to round off this little bit,
yeah, yeah,
the thing that I want to do, I think, is learn how to play some stunty teams.
That's a great idea.
Because you go in with a mindset. As I've said before in this podcast, I like playing the teams that can win.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if I go in with another mindset and say, right, take a year of the Fling. I know that's a positive thing. I don't think it'd be Flings because they're not my bag.
Mm-hmm.
But pick Goblins and go, right, I'm just going to play them for a few tournaments and in the league just so I can, one, improve my play with them.
Mm-hmm.
But two, also not get so stressed and not get so wound up when things go badly. But yeah, that's the first point. And I think the biggest point on my Fearless Blood Bowl adventure.
Like a fabulous thing to get stuck into.
So hold me to account. If you're playing me and you've listened to this and I start becoming Mardy, go, hey, be fearless. And I'll snap out of it.
There you go. Great.
So Mick.
Mine. Okay. Mine is just a fairly basic thing in Blood Bowl. I am not very good at using guard at all. And I think it stems from I resent the existence of guard. I resent it. When I see a team that has got lots of those green skill rings around it, I kind of go, a little piece of me dies inside. Somebody's broken the wing of the butterfly of joy inside me. I know it's just going to be, he's got God, he's got God. Two dice uphill, he's got God. And the only way to get, well, there probably are other ways around that, but one of the main ways around that is take God yourself.
Mm. Fight fire with fire.
Fight fire with fire. However, when I use God, I often find the dude I'm playing against they are in the perfect place. And whatever I do to hit the important piece, it's two dice uphill. And
right.
They've got block, I haven't got block. And you're like, well, to do anything useful, I kind of need to do three of these to make it work. And you're like, I can't see a way through it. And there will be a way through it, but I just can't see it yet.
That's fair.
My God, guys, there'll be one guy doing the Macarena off by the sideline, just being pinned by a goblin while all the action is happening somewhere else. The other one will just be, you know, surrounded by three guard guys and going, bigger boys came. And and they'll hurt him, and they'll hurt him badly. So with that, I think what I need to do to make that work, watch some more videos, especially on this, about where to position them and things like that. I tend to use orcs a lot in tournaments at the minute. And I think in my next tournament, just if I can find a way, I think three guards probably going to be too much.
Okay.
Three guard in a tournament, it's going to be the Wibble Bowl. And I think I get...
It's the end of May.
I think I get four normal skills and one double.
With four, you probably only take two, maybe.
Yeah, I think three is going to be trying to squeeze too much.
Yeah, you need a couple of block on your big guys.
You do. So I'm going to practice with that and just try and make it work.
Yeah, that's fair. I think position is the key thing for guard, I think. Like you said, you've noticed, you've realised that that's where... If one guard's over there being babysat by a goblin and the other guard's being ganged up on, then it's definitely position.
It's definitely position. And just getting excited by shiny things too early.
Yes.
So that's my first thing. I am no good at using guard and I need to get better.
Fantastic. Well, best of luck in that endeavour. Okay, so the second of my Fearless Adventure is I often fail to consider the best order of operations for my players.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, it means that we all know that the best Blood Bowl players make the plays that don't involve rolling dice first,
mm-hmm.
and then make the less risky rolls next, and then make the most risky rolls at the end.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that that's Blood Bowl in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
The way that things work on the pitch means that sometimes you have to leave that guy down because you're going to block it away and then blitz and move. And sometimes you have to make that risky pickup here, because if you don't do it here, then you can't then move on and stand next to somebody else and supply the assist that you need for a block and so on. It's not always cut and dried. But there are some things that I particularly am at fault with, in that I will fixate on the important part of the play without covering the bases with low impact things first. So for example, if I need to pick up the ball, I'll be like, right, do I need to do that first? I need to do it quickly, but I'll do it now. I'll do it now and get it out the way. And then I'll fail the pickup, even if it's a 1 in 9 with my sure hands guy. And suddenly I'll be like, no, what I really should have done is stood that zombie up over there first. Yeah. Just to stop this guy having a free rein to move.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are also times where I will do that, but halfway through the move, I'll go, no, hang on, I don't want to do this thing now, I want to do the other thing. So, for example, I'll go, I'll blitz with that guy over here, I'll move him in, and I'll stop, and I'll go, oh, no, hang on, I should stand that guy up first and move him to block this channel first. Because I'm blitzing with a guy without block, for example.
Yeah.
At that point, because it's a friendly game and we're allowed to say, no, hang on, I'll go back unless the dice has been rolled, we can reverse. I should go, no, hang on, my opponent, thank you. I'm not going to do that now. I'm going to stand this guy up and move this, and then I'll blitz. But what I tend to do is go, oh, I'll be fine. Because a lot of the time you are fine. Yes. You're not punished for the things that you should be punished for. But on that one time that you get punished, it's going to really kick you in the teeth.
Absolutely.
So I need to be more proactive in A, doing those things correctly to start with, and B, when I notice that I'm doing them wrong, taking a deep breath, pulling up my big boy pants and going, no, let's calm down, let's go back and do things in the correct order, because that will move me on to getting more wins in the long run.
Fantastic. I think it's a great plan. And anything that stops you having to roll that dice at the wrong moment and have more backup plans and safety belts has got to be a good thing.
Yes, agreed.
Great.
Your second one, mate.
My second one, it kind of ties in with the guard thing a little bit, really, which is I overcommit on the line when I'm in defence.
Okay.
This tends to be, I'd say, if I'm using a strength team like orcs.
Yeah.
What happens is I'll see the opposition lining up, and I'll be thinking, he's going to bully me off the line here. So I'm going to just stick tons of guys on the line and thinking, right, I'm not going to give him a sniff. And it tends to leave me with, you know, a thrower and a lineman a bit further back. And then what happens is they'll see that, not put too many guys on the line, swarm around me, and then all of a sudden my amazingly beautiful, fragrant-smelling forward line of orcs is just surrounded by mm-hmm. ne'er-do-wells and not able to manoeuvre at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm just playing horrible, horrible catch-up.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
What I'm going to do with that, the first thing is be aware that I tend to do that, and I'm desperate to punch people.
Yeah.
Pick out a couple of guys that I'm going to leave back, and not in the first turn just kind of go, the fight's over there, run in and punch them. Because my worst one is I normally take a tackle blitzer.
Yeah.
And I'll see somebody who just needs the kneecaps breaking.
Yeah, yeah.
And pile them in because it's
yeah, I do the same.
I just enjoy it.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Leave them back as potential. Leave them back as potential.
That is fair. It sounds like, as you say, an extension of your previous one with positioning being the key thing.
Mm.
Especially if you can leave the guys back to stop the actual guys running around to surround you. You can, you know, leave the guys back to just stop those channels being open. So that would mean that your orcs would have the maneuverability in the centre to be able to reposition should all their blocks go well, which of course they will because it's Blood Bowl.
It's Blood Bowl. Yeah. Dice always work as you expect them to. So that is my number two.
Fantastic.
And what is your number three?
My number three is I am blinkered when it comes to team selection.
Mm.
Now, this again is twofold. Not so much with league play. I'm happy with my team selection for league play. I play...
Now, do you mean the races that you use? The races, or do you mean the positionals that you use?
No, the races that use, to more than anything. I think that the positionals that I use and the skills that I give them, I've got quite a good grip on
mm-hmm.
for the teams I use. I generally use two teams when I'm playing in tournaments. Let's just get league play out of the way first. With league play, I tend to play much more for fun. I'm still the same Mardy Git when I lose. And as we know, I'm going to be trying to sort that out. But I will go and say, right, I'm going to play Khemri this year.
Mm.
I'm going to play Pact. I'm going to play Halflings for a bit, you know, until I just have to put them in the bin because he got me nerves. But I will always choose the big guy. I'll always make the fun play. Mm-hmm. I'll always choose these things because that's where the fun stories happen in the league. I'm a commissioner of the league that we're in, the league commissioner, and we've got other roles in the league itself. But because of that, I tend to make the soft choice.
Mm.
When I'm playing in the tournament, I make the hard choice.
You're all business.
I'm all business, yes, 100%. So I will largely either play Lizardmen or Shambling Undead, because they're the teams that I've had the most success with traditionally. The thing with Lizardmen and the positionals is when there aren't really any positionals in Lizards, you get Sauruses, you get Skinks, and you get a Croxagore. The skill package, they're usually tier one, so you'll get four or five skills, and all of that goes on block.
And are the Chameleon Skinks just dead to you?
I played a tournament with a Chameleon Skink. I think, well, when we get to the Lizard talk,
okay,
at some point, we'll go into this in more depth. I think that on the ball is a relevant skill. I think that shadowing is a pretty irrelevant skill. And I think the extra movement that you get with a normal skink trumps everything on that. So I would rather just have a normal skink. Yes. But because all your skills are going on block on your Sauruses, you're basically saying with that team, I need to get removals.
Hmm.
You might have a tackle piece or a wrestle piece, whatever you want. But it's all much, if you don't get removals, you're not going to win anything. With Shambling Undead, you're allowed a few more Swiss Army pieces mm-hmm. in that you can put Guard on the Mummies, you can put Short Hands on a Ghoul, you can make a Blodge and a Wrestler, you can put Tackle on this, you can put Mighty Blow on and you've got more things to do because you've got some block to start with, you've got some dodge, you've got a number of things, you've got Mighty Blow on the big lads, you've got things to do to start with. However, they are always at the top of the tree, and there are times when I go to a tournament and I wish I'd have spent more time considering the other options within mm-hmm. the rule set that mm-hmm. it is. I find people who are better coaches than I will see a rule set and go, the amount of skills and the tiering we've got means that this is good for high elves. And because it's good for high elves, there'll be loads of people playing some sort of dwarves maybe to stop with tackle because of the dodge that mm-hmm. the high elves will get or whatever the team is. And those sort of metagame considerations are something that I find myself struggling with. So this is a spoiler for the next section, but I'm playing Shambling Undead at the moment mm-hmm. and I'm getting a lot of draws. And I think that one way to mitigate that is that I could choose a team that has got a better position within the framework of the tournament which I'm playing.
More wiggle room
yeah. to play. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't consider things. Whenever I'm playing, I've got access to all of the teams. So I can play out any of the teams. I'll have to borrow a couple, but I mm-hmm. can play whatever. But I wouldn't consider a stunty team, even though a stunty team with, say, Griff and Morg might be a really viable option.
Mm.
And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that because I don't feel comfortable playing it. And I think I need to open my eyes a little bit more to the option, the fabulous feast of options that are available to a coach before the tournament begins. Because lizards are a glass hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And undead are containable.
Yes.
So there's more things to feast upon, I think.
Branch out. Well, yeah. Feast upon with your halflings. Well,
I could do.
The halflings sound like that's a bit of a world of pain you don't want to go back to.
Definitely. But, I mean, as I've said before, I will be looking at expanding my horizons within the stunty milieu, shall we say. But I'm also looking at playing some of the more tier 2 teams, like something like Necromantic.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm looking to branch things out, I think something like Regeneration is something that's hard to give up.
Yes.
Regeneration's amazing.
Yeah.
But there are options there. You know, there are other options that I could play. I've got a fabulously painted Tomb Kings team that Mick painted, which I'd like to see some tournament play. So I've got plenty of options, and I think marrying up the knowledge of the format, as in the tournament format that we're in, with some thought about the team I choose, rather than just, well, I'm either going to play Lizards or Undead, mm-hmm. will, I think, improve my skill set across the board, yeah. if all of a sudden I've got to learn how to play Dark Elves, for example, and also improve my results. I'll be exploiting the very thin slivers of advantage that making the correct metagame choice of team would give you.
Fabulous. Yeah. And in the final section we have today, I really hope there's a Blood Bowl coach called Thin Slivers of Advantage.
I can't promise that.
That name may well be out there. still to be chosen.
So what's your third and final?
Yeah, the third one, it's kind of the insane Chinese puzzle box of Blood Bowl to me. How on earth do one turn touchdowns work? I've seen several, they're like magic eyes to me. You see videos on YouTube of people doing one-turn touchdowns, and you put this fella there and he runs around there, and then you get a lineman picking up the ball and throwing it to the... And people do it! People do it!
Yeah, yeah.
And you end up pushing the fella like three or four squares into the opponent's half of the pitch and getting the one-turn touchdown.
Yeah.
And I'm sat there like a chimp having how a DVD player works explained to him. And it's something I've done the troll through a goblin.
Yeah, yeah.
Goblin lands and runs past. I've done that a couple of times.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, that's the fairly easy kind of cold play. you know, obvious way of doing the one turn touchdown. It's the bonkers Brian Eno. how did that even work? One turn touchdown. Need to learn how to play, and I think it's just watching it more, practicing it more, and seeing if I can make all those chain pushes happen.
That's fair. The quest for decent one-turn touchdown opportunities starts with your team selection. Mm. Only certain teams, well, shall we say, certain teams lean themselves into being able to do that. Stuff like Skaven, for example, with their 9 movement from the line would mean that the pushes that you need are a lot less than if it was Dwarves, for example. And also against the opposition that you're playing against, some teams have got setups and positionals that would help or hinder.
Yeah, forget it against Necromantic with all the stand firm and the sidestep yeah, and
very
all that
true, very true. But there are a lot of good videos and documents out there. I think also what you say, I think there's two ways for the one-turn touchdown consideration. There's being able to do them. Mm-hmm. And there's being able to defend against them.
Yes.
And I think learning how to do them will help you defend against them.
Mm.
You know, so
that's a very good point.
Yeah. But brilliant, yeah. If doing some more reading and more watching videos on Blood Bowl is a way to improve, then that's great because we all love doing that. We all enjoy the content amount that we can glom onto for this game. So yeah.
It's fantastic, the guys out there who produce all of those.
Brilliant, brilliant.
Very good. Okay. Lovely, well, fantastic. I hope you've all explored your inner self, and if you have your fearless inventory, let us know.
Yes. If you've got, as Mick says, if you've got some ideas of your own for your own fearless Blood Bowl inventory, then don't be shy in coming forward and letting us know, and we can share that with in future episodes.
Marvellous.
Well, and as I've said, if you see me being Mardy, give me a dry slap. Okay. Okay, welcome back. We're now going to go on to my personal performance at the recent NAF Championship in Nottingham, in which I took Shambling Undead. I had 6 matches across 2 days, and they were decent, but trending towards the unsuccessful more than the successful.
It sounds like a shipping forecast.
Yes.
Decent, yes. Trending towards unsuccessful.
Doggo, green, or whatever. Griff, ruined. Right, okay, so, as we've mentioned, I took Shambling Undead. I had 2 guard mummies, I had 1 god and 1 tackle whites, and then I had 1 block, 1 wrestle, and 1 sure hands ghoul. 7 skills overall, 7 normal skills. Mm. It felt like a decent build. I played some undead, we'll get to them, and they have slightly different, and we'll talk about that as we go along. But I felt happy with it. I think if the one thing I may have done was swap the sure hands for another block.
Okay.
But it was still useful. Sure hands is always
it's always useful.
I had 13 players, which included 4 zombies and 1 skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
I had 3 rerolls and 1 assistant coach. Very much similar to the UKTC build that I had as well. So my first round, I played against a coach called Tumuk Ing of Wu. Tumuk King of Wu. Tumu King of Wu. There we go.
That's good.
I played against a guy called Tumu King of Wu. And he was playing Khemri. He was one of the only 3 Khemri coaches there, I believe. Fun fact.
So Tumu King was actually a Tomb King?
Yeah, it must have been Tumu King. I presume so. It sounds like it could be. Fun little sidebar. He won the raffle for the painted team.
Well, hey.
So fair play to him.
Well done.
He didn't win the game, but then again, I didn't win the game either. It was 1-1 with 3 casualties apiece. So I received in the first half, and it went really well. I managed to KO 4 of his guys.
That's a good start.
Which is quite good against skeletons and stuff, because obviously they have a low armor, but they've got thick skull, so you need a bit higher on that. I also managed to, at the time, I think, knock out one of his Tomb Kings.
Mm-hmm.
I think I casualtied it, but it came back.
Very satisfying.
Which is fine. All the KOs came back after I scored on my turn 8, which is fine because that's sort of what happens.
Yes.
The second half, the Kaz and the KOs were pretty the same on both sides. He was pushing, I was trying to defend against him this time. Being 1-0 up, it felt okay. It all turned on, I needed a 1 dice block to be a push or better with a reroll, and unfortunately that failed. It was one of the early things that I did in the turn. And if we go back to my Fearless Blood Bowl inventory,
yes,
it might have been something I did too early. Thinking back, I could have maybe placed a few more pieces in a more defensive position, so yeah. it wasn't as glaring an error, if you
and
like,
did
when
that, he fell
was
over. That a turnover as well?
It was a turnover, okay, yeah. Okay. It, you know, it was a, I think it was a score winner both down, and okay. I didn't have block. As I say, it was a, each dice was a three up, if you like. Mm, it was
yeah.
the two pals, the two pushes are needed. So it was a 1 in 9 that it'd fail with my reroll.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But yes, unfortunately it felt. I also had a one dice blitz at one point with my wrestle ghoul that ended in a push on his ball carrier. So either of those, if they'd have worked, it would have meant that I was yeah. proper in it. Unfortunately, it didn't. The first one allowed him to press forward a lot better. The second one was more last ditch attempt, mm-hmm. if you like. So he scored on his turn 8, and then I had a one turn touchdown attempt. If you were with us last week, ladies and gentlemen, you remember we had a few of these
yes.
that never worked because of the kickoff results. Obviously, he put his Tomb Guardians on the line for the one turn.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
well, have they got stand firm?
No, they've not got no. stand firm, but they've got 5 bloody strength, so they're quite strong and hard to move yeah. around. But I'm like, I had 2 options. I had, like, should I set up for the one turn, or should I set up for the let's hopefully roll a 3 on the kickoff results?
Mm.
So I said, no, I'll set up for the one turn because that's...
It's more in your more control,
likely,
isn't it?
More in my control. And then, of course, I rolled a 3. So I still had the chance to get forward mm-hmm. And do stuff. So I got some guys in position to score. And he tried to stop me, but it wasn't cut and dried what he did. He didn't manage to... Because my guys were downfield. There was still an open guy.
Mm-hmm.
I still had to do a number of things and then... throw with a ghoul, which is never good.
Yeah,
I actually managed to get the throw with the ghoul, but I failed the catch with no rerolls.
Ah, okay.
It wasn't cut and dried after that. I still would have needed 2 dice splits into 2 go for its, and maybe even a dodge to score, but it was part of the thing that failed, so okay. that's fine.
Yeah.
So that ended up 1-1.
1-1.
So it's okay. a draw to start the day. So I'm immediately out of contention for winning the tournament. But that's yeah. fine. That's fine.
And unbeaten, though.
Unbeaten, yes.
Yeah.
Being unbeaten didn't last long.
All right, fair enough.
So my second round, I played against Snotlings. And this was a coach called Half a Brain. he had definitely more than half a brain okay. when it comes to playing the Snotlings. So he was playing Snotlings with Varag.
Oh, you see, I've never played against Varag before. What's he like?
Varag, well... Here's my notes. His turn 1, Varag, cast a mummy.
Oof.
So, yeah, I lost the game 2-0, and the casualties were 4 to me, 5 to him.
That's a violent game.
Yeah. I received, because I'm like, I've got more ways of getting to the end than having his bomber and stuff mm-hmm. get off the pitch. He had a bribe and so on, but, you know. However, it didn't matter that I received, because he cast a mummy early on.
Mm-hmm.
And he took the ball off me on turn 4, and he was literally removing guys at will. And I'm not talking with the bomber, although the bomber was doing fine work. Mm-hmm. He was going, Snotling, the pump wagon was removing, the Varag was removing, the troll was removing. Even the Snotlings ganging up were removing. It was just horrible. I did manage at one point to break to freedom about my turn 3, but Varag did chase me down. And... it was a tough one, this, because Varag did the go-for-it blitz
mm-hmm.
on my ball carrier. And what happened was, I got quite excited in that he failed the go-for-it.
Mm-hmm.
And he leant forward and put his Varag down. But in my excitement, as he was doing that, I went, oh, Loner, thinking that he would automatically use a reroll.
Yes.
Because it was a key play moment to
hit my
ball carrier. And... me saying that to him made him go, ooh.
I could use a reroll.
I could use a reroll. So he went, yeah, I'll use a reroll on that. And obviously passed his loner, got me down, everything. It all went perfectly. And I was sat there absolutely kicking myself because I gave him the idea. Because that's what I would have done. My learning from that is keep your mouth shut, Craig. Don't say anything.
For anyone of a certain age in Britain... that has seen that episode of Dad's Army. It's a don't tell him, Pike.
Yes, 100%.
And definitely. If you've not seen that, please go and YouTube now. Just type in "Don't tell him, Pike," and it's funnier than any way I could possibly explain it.
But that, unfortunately, was that for that part of the half. And then ball scattered, Varad got the ball. Everything seemed to be going right. And it was at this point I started noticing that he wasn't moving his turn counter on. And as you can tell, that was annoying. And my head went a little bit. And although I knew this was a facet of my game I needed to improve, it was a very stark reminder of that fact, shall we say. I spent the majority of that game in sullen silence, to be perfectly honest, which does not reflect well on me as a person. At the end of the game, I did apologise because he was a lovely guy. You know, it was me being a Mardy git.
Okay. Well, you've said it's something that you work on, and we know you're not a Mardy git.
No, I try not to be.
Yes.
Well, I am for the play, but afterwards. So anyway, I ended the half with three people in the Kaz box, including my unregenerating mummy, and two KOs, including both blitzers.
Mm-hmm.
Second half started, I started with nine players, and before my turn one, he'd removed another three. So I was kicking to him with my nine. Before I got to do anything, I was on six. Eventually, I was playing with one zombie and two ghouls, and it was just a tortuous grind that he just wound. You know, he had a full 11. Because, you know, including swarming people. You know, we had Matt. Yeah, it was just...
Oh,
my turns were like, unstun that, stand that up, blitz, go.
Well, look, in the positive thing, you're not going to run out of time.
Well, no, that's true. But it wasn't a fun game.
No.
Partly because I was Mardy. I will say, I lost 2-0. My opponent didn't fail a snotling dodge or game. One good thing is I, in desperation, had a 6+ mummy blitz ball carrier, and I got the blitz. That was a dodge, yeah.
Oh.
6+ dodge with a mummy.
That's on the highlight into reel tackle for the whole zones. Thing. Yeah,
he did it, and then I think it was pushes on the go. No, beg your pardon. He did it, and it was a one dice block, and it was both down. So we both went down.
Yeah,
on the ball, you know. So that was fun. My opponent was a very good snotling player. He ended the first day on two wins and a draw.
That's very good with snotlings.
And he, I found that he was very, very good at creating a three die block, which is with the bigger pieces, which is a very, you know, it's a good skill to have. Something that with the little guys, I tend to.
And with Varag and the trolls and the pump, that's going to get removals.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. 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 So that was that game. And that was, again, half a brain. It's not
half a brain.
So that leaves me on one draw, one loss. Then the third game, I played against Orcs, third round. I played against Dazaman.
Is that Daryl?
Daryl, yes, yeah, Dazaman.
Dazaman.
Yes.
Fantastic, fantastic. I've done a bit of painting for him. Absolutely lovely chap.
Yes, he is a lovely guy, yes. And this was, again, a one-all draw. Two casualties to me, four casualties to my opponent.
Yes.
I kicked this time.
Yes.
My opponent had bad luck for the first half and was very, very down about the weekend. I used to have a saying in Magic, it was great to sit down against an opponent who'd already lost the game before you shuffled up and started.
Yeah.
And it felt like that with my opponent. He was like, this has been awful. It's awful. Everything ago. Oh, look, I've just failed the kickoff.
Yeah.
All my stuff is bad. I understand. As I've said, I do a similar thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all been in that position. His orc team, he had no guard.
That's very brave.
Which was a surprise
to
me.
You know what? I love him already.
Fair enough.
I love him. Get
four
rid of the guard.
Four big into a block, it was great. But it allowed me to out-muscle him because my five guys had guard to start with.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing some out-muscling early on, which is good. I did remove the troll. It did regenerate, but it was off the pitch for the half, which was great. I scored on my turn six, which left him a couple of turns to score back, but he didn't manage it, so I went in 1-0 at the half. The luck swung back a little bit in the second half, although not all the way, if you believe my opponent. He was still rolling a lot of ones.
Yes.
Although a few of them were maybe in his mind.
Okay.
I broke through his line and I made a screen, but it was, because I was obviously on the drive this time, but it wasn't solid this time. So he managed to blitz on the carrier and then he got the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So, having me score on his drive, he was then threatening to score on my drive. There was some intrigue when he rolled double one on a go for it, which played into the narrative of his bad luck. But I failed three dodges with ghouls in three turns to be able to swing it back.
You got to question if they've been bribed with some rotten
maybe
meat
so
at that point,
maybe
don't
so
you?
they weren't great. Yeah, he then managed to sack the ball carrier and then he recovered the ball himself,
mm-hmm.
made a break for it, and I had a white blitz, which was my last ditch attempt to stop mm-hmm. the equalising score, and that failed with a reroll on a 1-9, and I felt like the luck swung back in his favour, but his luck was more rotten in the first half. Mine felt like standard luck.
Yeah.
In standard bad luck, if you like, in the second half. But the other thing, at that point, I felt like I wasn't playing very well. When I broke through the line to go for the 2-0 early in the second half, I don't think I'd have done that if I'd have won the first two games.
We were a bit down on the confidence with it.
Maybe so. I think I was just like, right, I'll just move it up there, get to 2-0, I'll be happy then.
Yeah.
So while I'm saying my opponent felt down on the way his weekend had gone, I also did myself.
Yeah.
And it allowed me to make more risky plays than perhaps I should have. I think I could have played more cagey. I didn't need to charge forward. I was 1-0 up with the ball, you know. But I gave the ball back to him by making that play.
Yeah.
And then he capitalised on it well. There we go. So end of the day, 2 draws and 1 loss, which was, as you can imagine, not where I wanted to
be. Not where you want to be.
So, round 4, I played against Turbo Raptor.
That's a good name.
Great name.
I love Turbo Raptor.
He was playing Shambling Undead.
Mirror match.
So it was the mirror match. He had 2 guard mummy, 1 tackle white, and then he had 3 block ghouls and 1 wrestle ghoul. So he had 1 naked white, if you like, but I had a guard white. So he had no skeleton either. Mm-hmm. He just had zombies. But it was largely the same build.
Yeah.
He had slightly harder to kill ghouls, I think, overall. So I kicked. But my extra guard that I had on the white immediately pressured him. And it was great. He had 2, I had 3. Suddenly, all my blocks were great. There's some good positioning.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, my guard blitzer died on turn 4.
Oh, dear.
So okay. I'm like, right, okay, that's my advantage gone with the guard fight. So it then became a bit more cagey, back and forward. I made him roll a 1 dice block, which he passed. Yeah, my attempt to stop him died on turn 6 with my snake go for it. But then on turn 7, I had a number of dodges and stuff to set up the preventing to stop him scoring. But my first one failed on the 1-9. And again, tying it back to the Fearless Inventory, if I'd have done things a bit differently, I might not have had that being the first thing to do. But, you know, what can you do? At the time, you're like, I must do this bit first. So he managed to go in 1-0 at the half. I did manage late in the half to Kaz a mummy.
That helps.
But it did regenerate, which was a shame. So on my drive, my removal started kicking in, which was much better. I started removing guys quite easily. I fouled and killed a mummy, which got my guard back, my guard advantage back with my 2 to his 1. I eventually broke through his line. As I say, I was knocking people out and everything and was set to score. And I was set to score on my turn 6.
Okay.
But he managed to come back and keep me in. And then he got a 1 dice blitz to KO my sure hands ball carrier.
Oh, God. Okay.
Which meant that suddenly the ball is free. I've got 2 turns. I'm close to his end zone. But I've got no rerolls, so it's all going to come down to 1 in 3 at some point, even if I make all of the blocks.
Was his ghouls going to go and pick it up? You would be using or skeletons or what?
His ghouls were largely KO'd. Mm-hmm. He couldn't get stuff to pick it up because when the ball was loose, it was still in a place where he couldn't successfully pick it up. Mm-hmm. He could mess with it a little bit, but he couldn't go and get it. So I then managed to get into a position that I had to get the 1 in 3.
Mm-hmm.
After a few blocks, just to clear away bits and pieces, the standard Blood Bowl stuff.
Late game tension.
Yeah. It was a 1 in 3, and happily my 1 in 3 did succeed.
Yes.
I picked up the ball, and I managed to score the equaliser.
Fabulous.
It felt like a nice game, that. There was no huge bad luck on either side. Mm-hmm. You know, it was my ghoul died early, but it was broken down by a mummy with mighty blow. That's what they're there for.
It's going to happen.
My fouling guy fouled one of his, but again, that's what you pray for.
Yes.
I think he got sent off as well, but I'm happy to take that trick.
Absolutely.
So that was, I felt like I did still feel distracted and not playing to the best of my ability, but We got through it.
And had you kind of recognised that by that point and was yes. working against it?
Yes, I was trying to do my best. As I say, it's sort of, I recognised it from the previous round, the last round of day one. And it was a bit disappointing that I was still distracted. But mm-hmm. I think that's always going to happen to me while I fixate on wanting to win.
Because mm-hmm.
obviously, early on in the Blood Bowl tournament, you know you're not going to win.
Yeah.
So I need to come up with a better metric of playing these games. I'm maybe concentrating on winning the game I'm in rather than winning the tournament. But yeah, that's work in progress.
I have some mini objectives apart from the maxi objective.
Exactly.
Yes.
So game five, I was playing against halflings. A guy called Kismet.
Kismet.
Yes. I won this one, which I'm happy to say was unfortunately my only win of the tournament. I won 2-0.
And
the casualties were 3 to me, 4 to him. So he was halflings with Griff, as you can imagine. Very, very strong.
Always take Griff.
I received in the first half, and obviously my game plan was to avoid the trees. And I just sat back and watched Griff do blitzes, run in, blitz, run away, keeping his Griff safe away from things. One of his trees rooted, which was great. So I shifted play to the opposite side, get away from that. No, beg your pardon. No, I shifted play to the side where the rooted tree was. Because the other one had a while to chase me down.
Yeah.
So I shifted play past the rooted tree, which did let Griff start to come in and meddle with the edges of the cage, which is fine. He was doing bits and pieces. I dashed to the sidelines and then made a one in nine dodge with my ball carrying ghoul to get a half a cage. And then I managed to clear up the path with a few blocks.
Yes.
Which meant that I was clear to score if I could clear a few more bits from his next drive. I sort of cleared everything away, and then he piled his stuff around again, and he managed to tag my guy, one of my guys, with a diving tackle guy.
Oof.
I couldn't block that guy away, but what I could do was blitz the guy away.
Yeah, always punch him.
And it was blitzing him away with the ball carrier. So I did that. I was tight on the sideline. There was a prone halfling in front of me that was stunned from a previous turn. And the plan was to run in, blitz the diving tackle guy, knock him down, run off score.
Yeah.
But I ran up, blitzed the diving tackle guy, and only got a push.
Yes.
So if I'd have followed on, I would then have to dodge away on a five.
Which you don't want.
So I didn't follow on. And instead, I jumped over a prone player.
Thank you.
Which is...
brilliant.
Fabulous.
For small victories.
Exactly.
That's a small victory.
That was nice.
I love that.
3+, had rerolls in the bank, made the 3+, ran in, needed a go for it because I didn't follow on, didn't have the follow-on opportunity, but managed to score on that. And that felt nice, that, because it's nice using...
Is that the first time you've done it?
It's not the first time I've done it, but it's the first time I've done it to score, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm always looking for that sort of stuff because it's a fun thing. And a 3+ isn't that bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's fine as long as you've got no tackle zones on either bit. But yeah, it was. I tend to do them and look for them more when I'm playing some sort of elf team or maybe Skaven with gutter runners because they're 2+. But it was nice. It was nice being able to get that. So I was quite pleased.
I've got a suggestion for you, and it might be a terrible suggestion.
Next
time you are in that rut and you're like, it's not working.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to get out of a match.
Yeah.
Are you aware of the kick in football, the Rabona?
Yes.
Where you kind of, you stand and then you kick around the back of your ankle on the ball. It's needlessly showy. There is no advantage. What I want you to do is leap over a player when there is no need whatsoever to do.
That's fair enough. I may well do that.
Yeah.
Challenge accepted.
Okay.
So, I was 1-0 up, and then my opponent had a one-turn touchdown with his trees and his stuff, but it failed the landing on the throw, so that was fine.
Mm.
Second half, it started raining, and I started knocking out his players.
Okay.
On turn four, my opponent went for a throw teammate.
Yes.
Which I was quite surprised at.
Quite early.
Yeah. He threw, and the scatter was appalling. It scattered three back. Which meant he was landing into a tackle zone. He did land, but he couldn't score.
Okay.
And obviously he'd not activated that player.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he'd go, because he was thrown three forward, or six forward, and scattered three back. I thought he'd go, let's regroup and run back behind the tree and let's try again. But my opponent decided, no, I'll keep pushing. And unfortunately, he failed a dodge a bit earlier with the carrier just to move him to a better place. And he was KO'd. So all of a sudden, the ball's near my guys. Yes, it's raining.
A gift from above.
Yeah. I did ground the ball, but I picked it up and managed to ground it back, avoiding too much griff damage. I managed to get the 2-0 score on my turn 7.
Very good game.
But it was a good game. I was surprised that he wasn't using his griff more as a ball carrier.
Mm-hmm.
He was using them as a hit-and-run damage machine. And I think griff with the ball is a lot more scarier than griff without the ball.
Oh, absolutely. He's just a touchdown machine, isn't he?
He's just amazing, yeah. That's where we were at the end of round 5.
Superb.
So for everyone keeping up at home, I'm now 1 win, 1 loss and 3 draws.
3 draws.
And the final round was against Orcs. It was against Little Spoon.
Little Spoon.
And that was another draw. That was 1-1 and it was 2-1 in casualties.
Okay.
So I received turn 3. Here's where I left a gap in the cage. When I blitzed with the corner of the cage as my first action.
Yes.
Halfway through the blitz, I went, hang on, this guy's not got blocked. Should I just put some other guys in the way first?
Yeah.
I'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
2 both downs, re-rolled, 2 both downs. Yeah, absolutely ruined. Suddenly, you could just waltz through my cage. I was fuming with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the thing that inspired my Fearless Magic commentary to be this one that I mentioned. It was a stupid, stupid mistake. If I want to go on and win the game, I can't do it with this. However, I scrambled through the pain and I still managed to hold him off, even though he managed to hit my ball carrier and everything. I picked up the ball and made some potato plays to get him away with my block ghoul, who he couldn't knock down when it made the dash, and I managed to score on my turn 8. So on his turn 8, he attempted a one-turn touchdown with his goblin. And he made it. To be fair, it was 1-1 at the half, and that's entirely fair given the massive mistake that I made. So, nothing to worry about there. In the second half, I managed to kill one of his biggins quite early, which was nice. Then I managed to stretch the play by just throwing my pieces against his pieces, and meaning that he couldn't really regroup to the best of his ability because biggins can't really dodge very much.
Nope.
So, that did manage to stop a decent cage. Eventually, my opponent rolled a double both down with blockers into double skulls, which really ruined it. I felt bad because when he went with the... It was block versus block, 2 both downs.
Yeah.
He went, I'll re-roll it. I went, skulls! And it was skulls, and I felt terrible.
You summoned the skulls.
I did summon the skulls. Although I did capitalise on it, even though I felt terrible. But I ultimately failed a pickup with a re-roll. The ball scattered to the mummy, who sixed it, and he picked the mummy then had the ball.
Oh.
However, he then managed to do some pushes and stuff to get my mummy away from the piece that he could hand it off to.
That's just rude.
So in my turn 8, I did a number of huge, and I will say myself, clever chain pushes. I did about 6 or 7 chain pushes and dodge and moves in order to get a chain push to push the mummy next to a guy to hand off.
Yeah.
And then he failed the handoff, which was a 3+ with no rerolls.
Yeah.
So that was the end of the game. I will say, I did all these cool things, a number of different rolls, and I probably would have been better just doing a 5+ dodge.
Yeah,
just
true.
Just dodge out, roll one dice,
just whatever.
See what happens.
So the 5 is a number on the dice.
It is. It can happen. It's a 1 in 3. But it ended 1-1. But that was another really fun game.
Yeah.
So overall, a slew of draws, 4 draws, 1 win, and 1 loss against
you've Southwest. Brought balance to the force.
Balance to the force again. I'm sick of balance. I want weighted towards success.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, overall, it was a really fun tournament. Hello, and welcome back to the final section of this week's edition of Miss Next Game, which is, of course, another scintillating round of the game show that everyone is talking about, Naff Name or Nonsense.
Yeah, some people talk very, very big, in very big terms, of the Olympic Games, the World Cup, Total wipeout, Phil, live from Argentina. But we all know what everybody wants to see. It's NAF name or nonsense.
This is true. This is true. For those just joining us for the first time, here's what happens. I have a list of five possible NAF names, that is names the coaches have given as their names, on the NAF registration site.
Mm-hmm.
There are currently 26,000 different NAF names on there. I shall give them one at a time to Mick, and he shall declare whether he believes they are NAF name or nonsense.
I will look into the ether and discern the deeper psychology of the individual and how they have chosen that name, and decide whether it's a real one or not.
Yes.
So bring it on. Five for five.
How did it go last time, Mick?
Poorly.
Yes, very poorly.
Four wrong, one right.
Yes.
And it didn't even want to get that one right by that point.
That was the last one.
That was the last one.
Okay, so.
Alabama Crayons.
Oh, yes, let's mention
that. We met Alabama Crayons.
We met Alabama Crayons. Alabama Crayons was a NAF name from last week.
Mm-hmm.
He played at the NAF Championship. I went and introduced myself. I asked if he was a friend of the pod. He didn't know what the hell I was talking about.
Yes.
But he did deign to have a selfie with me, so I'll put that up when we get the site up. You can see me and Alabama Crayons living it large down in Nottingham at the NAF Championships. He lived it considerably larger than I did, because at the NAF Championships, Alabama Crayons won the most touchdown trophy.
Which is amazing.
Over six games, he scored 20 touchdowns with Skaven. So well done,
and
Alabama Crayons.
That, I think that shows a kind of a mystical, beneficial nature of this podcast. If you
that
get mentioned, you are blessed.
That is true.
I'm putting that down to us, his victory.
Yes, that's fair enough, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry about that, Alabama Crayons. Apparently, nothing to do with your skill. It was me and me.
You can't find, I don't make the rules.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Without further ado, first NAF name or nonsense.
Mm-hmm. I've got my glass of wine here. Good.
Pandageddon. Is that a NAF name or is it nonsense?
Pandageddon. He lives in a house made entirely out of bamboo.
Bamboo, nice. And
there's one reason for this. Do you know what that reason is?
What's the reason?
Hates pandas.
He hates pandas. Okay.
Okay. The more he buys of bamboo,
yeah,
there's less for pandas to eat.
So he's trying to starve pandas by making his house out of all the bamboo in the local place.
What other explanation is there?
There's no other explanation for that. Yeah, you're fucking nailed on the head.
And this is a man with a bleak soul.
Okay.
A bleak soul. Mm. And I think for that reason, I don't think he plays Blood Bowl or he uses dwarves.
Okay, okay.
A bit of shade there. So I'm going to say he does not play Blood Bowl.
So, NAF name or nonsense?
Nonsense.
Pandageddon.
Final answer.
Pandageddon is NAF name.
No!
So you're carrying on the sterling work that you did last week. So yes, well done Pandageddon. You managed to fox Mick with your wonderful NAF name.
Be nice to pandas.
The second,
mm-hmm,
for your perusal, the Spaghetti Yeti.
Spaghetti Yeti.
NAF name or nonsense?
Well, let's look at the deeper psychology of the individual first.
Of course.
This is a man who has spent many years over in Nepal. He's spent years in Nepal having a terrible time because he only eats pasta. Now, how many times have you seen fields of wheat on high mountains?
Not many.
Not many at all.
No.
Not many at all. There may be some very stringy grass,
mm-hmm,
probably eaten by Himalayan rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're a thing or not, but I think he's too weak to play Blood Bowl through starvation.
Okay.
So the Spaghetti Yeti, he does not play Blood Bowl.
He does not play Blood Bowl.
Does not play Blood Bowl.
Final answer?
Final answer.
NAF name or nonsense?
Nonsense. Lock it in.
The Spaghetti Yeti?
Yes.
NAF name.
I'm on for the clean sweep again.
Zero for two. Wonderful.
Mm.
You're not very good at this game, Mick.
Well, yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Third for your perusal.
Third. I'm in tune with the universe now.
Nad Smasher.
Nad Smasher. Nad Smasher. this seems like a natural Blood Bowl name, because I think he's what they do. They have cut right to the jib of tactics. I remember an old picture of, it's one of the things that really got me into to Blood Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Pete Nifton picture of of the human armor.
Yeah.
Which had the extra reinforced jock strap.
Yes.
And there was the orc armor with all the different parts named, and it was the extra reinforced half coconut.
Nice.
And I think Nad Smasher has taken that as his or her, as their mantra and their meaning of life. And they live Blood Bowl, breathe Blood Bowl. They attend every weekend. They're at a Blood Bowl tournament. Mm-hmm. Of course they play Blood Bowl. Final answer.
So Nad Smasher. Nad name or nonsense?
Absolutely naff name.
Nad Smasher. Naff name.
Yeah! Oh, yes! I got one.
So, 1-2. Good work on that one.
1-2. I still got a chance of winning.
You still got a chance of winning?
Turn it round.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Fourth. Sexy Cormorant.
Sexy Cormorant. Actually, that doesn't really narrow it down to, because I think all cormorants are sexy.
Well, of course.
The black and sleek.
Feathery beauties.
Absolutely. They have little bubbles attaching to them as they go underwater and catch fish. What could not be sexy about that?
Very true.
There is a however. There's a however. If you are spending all your time underwater and just having a terrible time with oil slicks.
Hmm.
And it always seems to be the cormorants that come out of this worst with oil slicks.
That is true, yeah. Clean them with a toothbrush and all that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Poor things.
Yeah, don't want you to bring
baby oil makes them more sexy, but actually crude oil makes them less sexy.
It absolutely does. A baby oil cormorant. Yes, absolutely. I think for that, they've got a lot on.
Mm.
And I don't think they've got time for bubble. Too much time either eating fish, looking sexy, or being toothbrushed with bleach.
Mm-hmm.
Nonsense.
So, naff name or nonsense, you're saying nonsense?
Nonsense, yes.
Sexy cormorant?
Yes.
Nonsense.
2-2! Equalised. It's all down to the last one.
All down to the last
all
one.
All down to the last one.
How exciting. The final one for your perusal.
Yes.
Naff name or nonsense. For the win.
Yeah.
Or for the crushing defeat for the second week in a row.
Yes.
Naff name or nonsense.
Yes.
Seriously, I'm a giraffe.
Seriously, I'm a giraffe. Okay. I think this is someone who's trying too hard.
Okay.
I'm imagining they spend their time trying to use stealth invasions of safari parks.
Okay.
Which is, it's questionable. It's questionable behaviour.
Definitely.
The first thing is you've got to get yourself your outfit. You've got to make sure your outfit looks enough like a giraffe.
Yeah.
It clearly doesn't look like a giraffe because he has to keep saying, seriously I'm a giraffe. Yeah,
that makes bizarre sense.
I can't see them out running blinds.
No.
Unless they've got a really good plan for getting in. They normally put the lines on the outside of safari parks.
Do they?
I'm basing this on seeing a lion. A safari park.
Okay.
And I think they should just, I think they have given up on that quite easily. I think they've given up on it easily. And they do play Blood Bowl. They do play Blood Bowl.
They do play Blood Bowl.
Yeah, because, you know, once you've had your legs chewed off, invade the safari park, just sit down and play Blood Bowl.
Fair, yeah. It's always been the game of choice for post-chewed leg.
Yeah, absolutely. Patience.
Yes, it has. Okay, so, seriously, I'm a giraffe. Naff name or nonsense?
Naff name.
Final answer.
Final answer.
Seriously, I'm a giraffe?
Yes.
Naff name!
Yeah. 3-2! 3-2! Brought it in.
Fantastic work there, Mick. 3-2. You've won the week. You can have a piece of key lime pie as your prize.
Oh, brilliant.
Well done.
That is super.
So you're now 1-1 for the two episodes. Yeah. So you can obviously go on and drive forward and become the champion,
the master of this, for next week. I think I'm working out the
formula.
How these people tick.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, of course, and your as usual, your character assassinations of the people involved.
I think they've come out of this very well, actually. They're all friends of the podcast now.
That is true.
And they will win a glittering prize at the next
tournament. Just as Alabama Cranes did.
Absolutely.
So there were four actual NAF names this week. There was Seriously I'm a Giraffe, Pandageddon, Nad Smasher, and the Spaghetti Yeti. So thank you all of you for your wonderful NAF names that helped inspire this. And we apologise, or I apologise, for Mick's rather colourful descriptions of your way of life. Obviously, all resemblance to characters living and dead is entirely coincidental.
Entirely their own problem.
It is. Great stuff. So that was another edition of NAF Name or Nonsense.
NAF Name or Nonsense.
So, that's another episode of Miss Next Game in the Books. Thank you very much for joining us. I know that everyone has plenty of things to choose for their entertainment these days, so the fact that you've chosen us is much appreciated.
Or shows that your iPod is stuck.
Maybe that's the case. But either way, thank you for being here and not yeeting your iPod into the sea. Next week, we're going to be talking about lizards in our team spotlight.
Absolutely. And, Craig has used lizards one heck of a lot, so it's to some great success.
Thank you. We'll also be talking about our performance in the upcoming Wibble Bowl.
Yes, which local is a tournament in
three-day tournament in Leeds, on the outskirts of Leeds.
Holmfirth,
yes.
Is that where Last of the Summer Wine is?
I think so, yeah. Maybe they'll see Varag rolling and a bath on wheels going down a hill.
With laddered tights.
Maybe so. Yes, we'll be talking about our performance in that. Hopefully we'll do well. I say that's at the end of May. We'll also give you an update on our Fearless Blood Bowl inventories, let you know how our progress has been made with those. And we shall round it off, as always, with another fantastic round of NAF Name or Nonsense.
Or Nonsense, yes.
So, without further ado, thank you very much for joining us. And until next time, I hope you roll pals.
Have a brilliant evening, day, morning, everybody.